Today's episode is brought to you by Stone Symbol Jewelry, a new jewelry brand that brings ancient art to modern luxury. Stone Symbol, beauty, legacy, and purpose. Find out more at stonesymbol.com. Welcome to the Edge Conservation Podcast. We bring you the latest in innovation, insight, and effort on the front lines of wildlife conservation in Africa and around the world. I'm your host, Kira Dorian. Today, we are taking you to Bela Bela, Limpopo, South Africa, to talk to Sean Hensman, entrepreneur, conservationist, and founder of the Rory Hensman Conservation and Research Unit. Sean, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Kira. Nice to chat to you guys, and thank you for everything out here.
Lovely. So let me start by just asking you to tell us a little bit about the Rory Hensman Conservation Unit, the work that you do. How was it founded? Like, give us a sense of your background and what it is that you guys are doing on the ground.
Kira, yeah. The Rory Hensman Conservation Research Unit was founded a few years back. We do a lot of research on elephants, and we do a lot of conservation work in our area. And we named it after my father, who I was very inspired with in terms of conservation. And so he passed away. And so shortly after that, we decided to put all of our conservation work and research under his name, because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. And a lot of other people around the world who have met him, I don't think would be in conservation had they not met him. So yeah, so that's the inspiration behind it. We do a lot of research. Our herd of elephants that we've got are probably one of the most researched herds of elephants in the country. And we study everything with a myriad of people and organizations from around the world. So we'll study elephant behavior, elephant feeding patterns, elephant communication, the elephant scenting ability, a whole bunch of things, their skin, their teeth, their feet, all of that. Yeah, and so everything that we learn about elephants, we're trying to utilize for elephants to make their world a bit better, but also to try and assist humans as well. So trying to find solutions to human-elephant conflicts, problems, and poaching issues, and those sorts of things. So that's kind of like the background of what we do. To put it bluntly, we try and highlight the issues facing wildlife and conservationists in an ever-changing and modernizing Africa. And I think that that's the simplest way to put it across. There's a whole myriad of different things that are happening and a whole bunch of different strategies. And we're just trying to say there's nothing silly out there. There's nothing that's ridiculous, and all of it can assist in one way or another.
Wonderful. And you mentioned the human-elephant conflict. Can you, for our listeners, explain what that is and tell us just a little bit more about that?
Yeah. I was actually at a conference in the States not so long ago, in Florida. And it's actually something that I find as an international problem, not human-elephant conflict. You guys don't have many of those in Florida, but human-wildlife conflict. As humans are overpopulating the world, we are coming into contact more and more with wildlife, and wildlife is confined to 5% of the world's biomass, 5% of the world's biomass, and we've taken over the rest. So, yeah, we're invariably going to bounce into each other, and this becomes a real issue when you have a rural African who lives off subsistence crops and who lives a subsistence lifestyle, and who values his crops and values his wildlife more than anything else. And when a herd of marauding elephants come through and eat his only crop for the year, or kill his cattle or his daughter or something like that, then you get a conflict situation. And it's not really the elephant's fault, and it's not really the human's fault. Both are actually just in a really tough place. And so everyone's trying to find solutions. Everything's been trialed. There's been chili pepper research. There's been, fencing is one of the solutions, although we sadly couldn't help one elephant that had to get put down just the other day in a reserve nearby. They clever enough to figure out how to get past electric fencing. So these issues are ongoing. We're playing with intelligent animals and also desperate animals. They're where this conflict happens, wildlife is confined to that those areas that I was saying, and it's actually normally the worst quality land. It's land that we're not using for agriculture. It's land that we're not using to live in. And the reason it was set aside as wildlife areas is because our livestock don't do well there either too. So, you know, you're trying to tell elephants not to go marauding a field of luscious green mealies or maize meal or whatever it is, and you're trying to tell them to stay in an area that can't really support them either.
It's like you're trying to tell them not to be elephants, it sounds like.
Well, exactly. You're trying to tell them not to live.
Right.
I think that's what it comes down to, you know. He has a food source, and they don't understand our rules. They don't understand, you know, the way humans operate. They see food, and to them it's food. And nobody's taken it. It belongs to no one. It's basically how they see it. And yeah, that's it. Whereas we as humans have attached property to everything. We ownership. And that becomes an issue.
Right. So what's the general status of elephants in South Africa specifically, but then also continent-wide?
Well, South Africa's got a very healthy elephant population. We actually have overpopulation issues, and as a result, it's very hard for people to actually find homes for elephants anymore in South Africa. Most reserves that we know have exceeded their carrying capacities, and they're actually under pressure now because of elephant overpopulations and the impact that those elephants are having on other species to reduce the elephant population. So that's a tough one. There's people trying to move elephants all over the place. In South Africa, they've moved a whole bunch to Malawi and Mozambique and places like that that have had elephant populations slightly decline. But in South Africa, our elephant population is very healthy. I think the same applies to places like Zimbabwe. Botswana's got a very healthy elephant population as well. Namibia's got an excellent elephant population. Malawi have had to move elephants from one reserve to another. That was done by African Parks, a great initiative. And the same thing, they had too many elephants in one reserve, so they moved a whole bunch to another. A lot of the southern African states have good elephant populations, and if you look at other countries, that's starting to change too. As protection gets stronger, the elephant numbers are starting to rise, although we still have issues sort of further north and around the equator. The forest elephants, which are our little elephants, are being poached, at a rapid rate, and that's a very concerning issue.
Yeah. So what do you think other groups or efforts are getting wrong in their efforts with elephants? And are there groups that you think are really getting it right? In other words, what's working, what's not working?
It's a contentious issue, and it's one that, to publicly talk about, you'll get criticized from both angles. I think South Africa has a great sustainable utilization policy. People are incentivized to have elephants on their land and are incentivized to want to kind of protect them and increase numbers, actually. And I think that that's something that we've got to consider. When your local rural African values his cattle more than he values the wildebeest or the elephants running across his backyard eating his crops, he's going to take them out. If he starts to value those species more than his cattle, and he stands to gain more from those species, then he will protect them, and he'll look after them and turn that area back into a wildlife area. That's what's happened to most of the land in South Africa that's available to wildlife. The farmers here can benefit from our wildlife. We can breed it, we can sell it, we can utilize it. And as a result, we've increased our wildlife population from 500,000 animals in the 1970s or 80s to over 8 million today.
Wow.
But I can promise you that if you took away that value from those farmers and they no longer benefited, they would turn those farms back into cattle farms. Cattle farms, golf estates, and anything else that would make them money if they were spending money on their wildlife. And it comes down to that simple fact, I think. But that being said, I don't think anybody's doing it wrong, and I don't think anybody's doing it right. I think everybody's got their opinion, and and everyone's trying. And it sounds very sits on the fence-ish attitude to take. But the more, in my humble opinion, the more people who are interested in having wildlife and protecting wildlife, the better it is for the wildlife. It doesn't matter if it's a hunter or if it's a, I don't know, an NGO sitting in New York. At the end of the day, those two organizations are incentivized to have wildlife. And then that's great. I think while we're all slinging mud at each other, wildlife is taking a hammering. And if we agree to disagree and we agree to focus on, you know, ensuring that what we do is correct, we'll solve a lot of problems, and we'll work together and save wildlife. But the minute we start saying somebody else is doing it wrong and somebody else is, you know, abusing a system or using it for their own gain or whatever, then we stop focusing on what actually needs to be done, increasing wildlife populations, and we focus on, you know, fighting each other, which gets nobody anywhere.
Yeah, I love that. So what do you think are the toughest problems that these elephants are going to face over the next decade? Like, can you project forward and get a sense of what that's going to look like?
Yeah, my toughest projection is what happens when we save these elephants.
Right.
Because, as I said, we're going to save elephants. We're facing it in South Africa already. We've done a fantastic job of increasing our elephant populations. Now we've hit the opposite side of the pendulum. The pendulum has swung, and now we've got, in my opinion, too many on many of the reserves. And now they're stuck because they have overpopulations of elephants, and their elephants are eating themselves and other wildlife out of house and home.
Right.
So now what do you do with the overpopulations? Are there people out there who are prepared to, you know, buy huge tracts of land, manage it, fork out the millions and millions that it costs to manage those pieces of land and run them? And then when it gets to the elephant population overpopulation issue, you know, find other places to put them. I think there are people out there who can. But I think it would be much easier to incentivize people to want to have those animals than to just rely on a couple of very wealthy people to fork the bull the whole time.
So what is your take on the 90 elephants that were killed in Botswana last weekend?
Yeah, disappointing. It's a sad reality. I can't talk about it too much because I actually don't know all the facts.
Okay. And can you tell our listeners a little bit about what happened, just for people who may not have heard about it?
Yeah, so an elephant organization, Elephants Without Borders, have been doing some great work in Botswana and Angola and other African states. They do a fantastic job. And they've done a recent census on elephants across Africa. They Botswanan government have recently stopped hunting as a source of income for, you know, some of their conservation efforts, and in my opinion, that hunting was a way of managing elephant numbers and stopping human elephant conflict in Botswana. And now that that's stopped, I think the local people have taken it into their own hands. And recently, I think it was 80-odd elephant were observed in an area near the Delta to have been poached. These things happen. It does happen. And the sad reality with poaching is that they're only after the ivory. They're not after anything else.
Right.
It's just a way of making money.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, on a happier note, can you tell us some things about elephants that people might be surprised to discover? And I would love for you to specifically talk about, in my research, I read about one of the elephants solved a crime, and I would really like for our listeners to hear more about that and anything else that they might be surprised to discover.
Sure. I think this is one of the most wonderful things about my position. I'm lucky to have 7 elephants. They are tamed and trained elephants, and we can work with them in a hands-on manner, and we can watch them in the wild just doing their own thing, and as a result, we're able to Yeah, I think learn a lot more than somebody who just watches them from a game drive vehicle every day and or who watches them on TV. And in the same time, we're able to trial things. So what you were talking about, using elephants to solve crimes and that sort of thing, we recently had some copper cable thieves here locally who had stolen some copper cable, and the police bust them and rounded up a whole bunch of suspects. And then what we've been focusing on with our elephants is using our elephants to try and assist in fighting crime and anti-poaching, you know, efforts by using their incredible sense of smell. So we lined up some of the criminals' clothing, and then we lined up a whole bunch of items that were left at the crime scene, and then did a simple scent matching exercise where we asked the elephants to smell an item of clothing that was left at the crime scene and walk down the line of other clothing and identify the criminal or match the scent that they just smelled to a piece of clothing.
Wow.
And, the elephants identified a few people out of that. And then we did the same thing the next day with a bunch of the people there. And the elephants, you know, gave back the items of clothing that were left behind, which was the same shirt with the same, you know, hat and stuff. And it led to arrests, but it can't be used because it's not yet scientifically proven that a elephant is as good as a dog and that sort of thing. So we've been working on that.
Wow, that's so amazing, though. You need a reality TV show, I feel like Elephant Crime Solvers.
Amazing elephants. I mean, what they're teaching us on a daily basis is insane. Mm. So, definitely. Yeah.
That's incredible. And do you work with other animals or just elephants?
I've been lucky to work with, dogs, horses, you know, all the normal stuff that most people do. I have a pet meerkat as well. His name's Trouble, and he keeps us on our toes. So I work with him quite a bit. And then just the elephants. As kids growing up, my father was always keen on us, you know, having wildlife and our backyard. And so lots of people used to bring us orphaned animals. So I had pet kudu and pet impala and serval cats and crows and warthogs and dika and a whole bunch of things as we grew up. So
that's amazing. Eric and I just mouthed wow to each other in the booth because, of course, I had a hamster growing up. Eric, what did you have?
Well, so did I.
did you have any pets, yeah. Eric, growing up? You had a cat, not a meerkat, just a cat. That's amazing.
I tried for a snake once. I wasn't invited into the house, so I never got around to that side of things. But yeah, no, we've been very, very lucky as children. As I say earlier, if it wasn't for my father's foresight, we wouldn't have this passion for wildlife. And we've learned a lot about all of our animals and we love them dearly.
Yeah, what an incredible way to grow up. I can't quite fathom it, but it sounds remarkable.
Yeah.
Do you have a best elephant? Do you have like a special elephant friend? You know what I mean? Like, is there a favorite? I mean, I'm sure you don't. You love all your elephants equally, I'm sure.
I do. I get on with one of the Ellies called Chishuru. He's kind of one of if I can put it this way, he's one of our best sort of characters. Chishuru sounds very similar to Chitsiru, which is idiot in our local language. And I think he lives up to that name quite well. But he's we just have a good connection. We just click when we work together. I do a lot of movies and commercials and a lot of research with him. And we have a very, very special relationship. So Chishuru is my favorite. And then on the opposite end of the scale, we've got a female called Shan, and me and her have a love-hate relationship. She loves to hate me, and I try my best to love her, and that's just the way we are.
I love it.
At the end of the day, this is one of the things that a lot of people don't realize, is elephants have personalities. They're each individual, and they like who they like, and they don't like who they don't like. It's as simple as walking into a bar and chatting to other people there. It's exactly the same. They've all, you know, some people you'll get on with and others you won't.
That's wonderful. They sound wonderful. Tell us, before we sort of start to wrap up, I want our listeners to know how they can help. Like, what can we be doing to participate in solving some of these issues and supporting people like you and the groups out there that are working to solve some of these problems?
I think what people have got to do is find a group that they are happy to get behind. And then I think one of the most important things is for people to look at what I call the holistic picture in terms of conservation. People are often very passionate and very keen to help and are happy to throw their money at something that they maybe don't know the bigger, wider implications of what they're doing. And I often liken it to a beggar on the street. You might walk past a beggar on the street and he looks like he needs all the help in the world and all of that, and you give him, you know, $50 or whatever, and then he goes around the corner and buys crack cocaine with it. And I'm not saying that everybody does that, but what I'm saying is you got to be very careful where you put your money and make sure that it's getting to the ground. It's the owners of wildlife. It's the custodians who actually need your money the most. And because they're the ones on the ground who are fighting the battle on a daily basis. So yeah, get behind an NGO. We work with lots of NGOs, Edge, and a whole bunch of others, and get behind them, and just understand who you're working with. And as I say, always look at the holistic picture of conservation. There's a lot more going on than most people in different cities and different countries around the world are actually aware of.
Yeah, I think that's true. And so what do you think groups like Edge, what do you think they are doing that is different, that makes it worth investing in their work?
So I think that they get behind ground operations. I think a lot of the funding that they earn goes back directly to people. I know they're flying rangers from Africa, from South Africa, and I'm not sure if I can say which reserve, but they're flying people from South Africa to America to actually come and get some proper training from your national parks and your, army and that sort of stuff. And then they're flying them back to South Africa. And hopefully that zhuzhes up our tactics. And it gives us a different insight to things. They're supplying simple things, boots on the ground. They've approached a couple of your shoe companies in the States. And it sounds really, really silly, but a ranger is totally ineffective if he doesn't have a good pair of boots on.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so give him shoes. At the end of the day, it's your ranger's feet on the ground. It's giving them the equipment to be able to do their job. And often it's not the very fancy, I can say drones or thermal imaging or whatever it is. It's literally just people on the ground doing what they do best, tracking, looking for sign, and then following up with it. And it's the simple things that makes the ranger happy on the ground and comfortable and content to do his job.
Yeah, I love that. So if people want to find out more about you, about the Rory Hentzman Conservation Unit, where can they go? Give us some websites.
So they can look up www.recru.com, so RHCRU.com. And we're there, or adventureswithelephants.com. And they can just have a Google there. And then our contact details are on the website, and they're more than welcome to get in touch with us through those means.
Wonderful. And really quickly, because I haven't asked about it, tell us a little bit about Adventures with Elephants, because it looks incredible.
So Adventures with Elephants is an elephant interaction and research facility. We're based out in Bela Bela, Limpopo Province, South Africa. We've got seven elephants, five adults and two calves, and we conduct elephant educational programs, so we allow the public to come and meet our elephants and learn about them. We pride ourselves in being more than just a touch, feed and photograph experience. We actually really try to show people things about the elephants' memories, their abilities, like their scenting ability that I've discussed. Their personalities, how intelligent they are, we give demonstrations of that. And really try and show people just how wonderful elephants are, and explain a little bit about their conservation and how they are such a keystone species in Africa's conservation fight. Just how good they are for conservation, but also some of the opposite sides and the results of overpopulations, etc. And then Yeah, we also do a lot of research with our elephants. So as I mentioned, we're probably one of the most researched herds of elephants in the country. And all of that is contributing to elephant knowledge and assisting in helping humans as well as wildlife.
That's amazing. It's fantastic. Sean, thank you for being with us today. I think you are possibly the coolest person I've ever talked to, not the least of which is because you have elephants for pets.
Thank you.
But we just really appreciate your time and your expertise, and it just sounds like what you guys are doing is wonderful. So thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you, Kira. We're really trying hard, and thank you for your time and giving us a bit of a voice.
Thank you for listening to the Edge Conservation Podcast, where we hear from the greatest stewards in wildlife conservation. For more information on Sean Hensman and the Rory Hensman Conservation Unit, you can visit rhcru.com or adventureswithelephants.com. I'd like to finish today's episode with a quote by Steve Irwin. If we can teach people about wildlife, they will be touched. Share my wildlife with me, because humans want to save things that they love. Join us next week. Our podcast is produced by Eric Johnson, me, Kira Dorian, and Edge. If you like what you hear, please give us that 5-star review. It's amazing how ratings and reviews really are the key to a successful podcast. So if you're interested in the work that we're doing, give us a positive rating and we can bring you more of it.